And of course, your phone calls this hour, along with constitutional attorney Jonathan E. Moord. And we're going to take your calls with him and your concerns when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with constitutional attorney Jonathan E. Moord and your questions this hour. Jonathan, what got you to specialize in constitutional law?
You know, ever since I was a little boy, really, but principally in my teenage years, I was fascinated by the unique nature of our Constitution, that this was a first in the history of the world when the divine right of kings was traduced by the notion that individuals had rights, that those rights were paramount over government, that they were unalienable, that you were born with them, and that it was the duty of government to protect them, and that just governments would protect them, but the governments that were opposed to them were necessarily tyrannical, and that it was the right or the duty of the people to overthrow such governments and establish ones that would protect their rights. So the notion of rights theory fascinated me as a boy, and throughout college absorbed my attention, so I devoted a considerable amount of time to studying the original documents, the founding documents, and the Federalist Papers, and you know the all of the underlying things too, Pufendorf and all of the Hume and all of the great English writers, the opposition political movement to the Hanoverian kings. And so then, when I went into law school, I studied constitutional law, loved it, and became intensely interested in the First Amendment. And then, unbeknownst to me, my professor for my First Amendment seminar class sent a copy of my paper for the class to the FCC chairman, who was Mark Fowler, mm-hmm. and in the Reagan administration. And he then invited me to Washington to work for the FCC. And I said, how can I work for an agency I don't believe should exist? And he laughed, his aide laughed, Jerry Fritz, and said, that's exactly why we want you to come out here. So I ended up in Washington in the Reagan years, and that's the story.
And you never stopped since?
No, I love this country, and I love the Constitution, and I believe fundamentally in individual liberty, and I really wish deeply that we could restore our republic and recreate a great nation based on freedom to do with your own resources what you wish and to believe what you wish without being yelled down at a university or treated as if you were a pariah because you don't engage in politically correct discourse. We need to be a nation of tolerance, a nation of diversity, a nation of liberty. And we need to compliment people for their achievements, whether it's wealth, whether it is invention, and we should respect as a prized gem that has built this nation into greatness the fact that liberty was its cornerstone. We've left that premise, and we've lost our place, and we had the opportunity to be a global superpower, to lead the world into a condition of liberty that was vast and far-reaching, and we've abandoned that role. We've retreated, and we're really in a state of decay because we won't do what is most fundamental, and that is protect individual liberty. We're great people, and we can achieve enormous things. We've proven that. Invention was our hallmark, and we can get there again, but we certainly can't get there if we're going to have a nation governed by a bunch of bureaucrats who care little about your freedom and more about their own power and their ability to manipulate their office to their own personal advantage.
That's true. Jonathan's books, Global Censorship of Health Information, The Rise of Tyranny. When you were with the FCC, was Jim Quello still there?
He was. He's a great man. He's a great man. He was a person, I remember the Fairness Doctrine debates, and his vote with the Reagan administration, even though he was a Democrat, to get rid of this noxious doctrine that allowed the government to exercise editorial discretion over the editorial choices of broadcasters. And talk radio such as your program would be constantly scrutinized in a fairness doctrine environment.
Thought the world of him. He was a great broadcaster in Detroit before he got named to the FCC. And he was one of my instructors at the University of Detroit, Jonathan, and that's where I got to know him well. And, you know, when he got appointed to the FCC, I'd call him every once in a while because he'd want to follow my career. He got a kick out of that. And it was just very special. He died at the age of 95, but he was one of the few great broadcasters who went on to, you know, be part of the FCC. And, God, he was so missed. So missed. We need a million of them like him.
Yep, he was a great man.
Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Kevin in Slayton, Minnesota, east of the Rockies, to get things started. Kevin, you're on with Jonathan Emord. Go ahead. Well, good to have you with us.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Back in the mid-60s, I came down with the mumps, the measles, and the chicken pox when I was in third grade. And missed a month and a half of school after being vaccinized. And I thought that was kind of strange at the time and for years and years. And in my 40s, I dropped out, changed my career, and moved to a small community where I became aware of a group of people becoming suicidal and committing murders and that, and realized that they were all part of a program where second graders were being treated for attention deficit disorders. And at that time, I went to, as a gonzo journalist, I went to investigate Health and Human Services in South Dakota, and found out that in Minnesota, one of the state-run hospitals was converted into a chemistry plant.
Huh, that's weird.
Well, yeah, Wilmer, Minnesota, they were making vaccines for all these different flus, and all of a sudden I found out through my research that they were working on psych meds, you know, instead of keeping somebody in a hospital to keep them out of trouble, they were giving them chemicals and sending them back into society.
Well, that's always been a huge problem, Kevin. And Jonathan, I don't think, what can we do about it? Big Pharma's got too much of a rope around people.
Well, it has a tremendous, you know, when you create a state-sponsored monopoly, as we've done with the pharmaceutical industry, the collusion between government and industry can be expected. And what we have really is Food and Drug Administration that's a patsy for the drug industry. A lot of people don't realize this, but the drug industry, if you're a drug company applicant for a new drug, you submit your own clinical trials done by your own people, and there's no independent testing by the FDA. They just review what you submit. And while the FDA medical reviewers oftentimes are sharp and can pick up problems, obviously there's an inherent conflict of interest in a party that has an economic interest in getting a drug on the market being the one that is presenting all the evidence related to the safety and efficacy of the drug. But the FDA has, we've got, you know, enormous amount of evidence. The FDA, time and again, authorizes the marketing of even drugs it knows to be unsafe in order to placate the interests of the leading drug companies. And Dr. David Graham, the FDA Associate Commissioner of Drug Safety, has testified repeatedly and is against the FDA, his own agency, for this undue influence by the drug industry and for the FDA's approval of unsafe drugs and unsafe medical devices to satisfy the economic interests of the ones it's supposed to regulate. It's a revolving door. The FDA commissioner knows that if she or he plays the cards right, favors particular companies over others in this whole process, when they leave office, they can get employed by those companies or sit at university chairs that are financed by those companies or otherwise exist in public interest groups that are financed by those companies. It's a real racket.
Haven't we had attorneys go from Monsanto to the FDA, from the FDA back to Monsanto?
Sure. All major drug companies are really populated by former FDA people and prospective FDA people. Congress itself is so heavily influenced by drug money and by the drug lobby that former Congressman Dan Burton has said that if there's a bill that the drug industry wants passed, it'll be passed. And if there's a bill they don't want to have passed, it won't be passed because they can marshal lobbyists, upwards of five lobbyists for every member of Congress, and they fund every member of Congress. They dump money into every congressman's campaign, into their political PACs as well as their leadership PACs, which have none of the limitations that the Federal Election Commission puts on political action committees. So they really have bought their way into our market. A classic example of that is Medicare Part D, the prescription drug benefit. That benefit includes a provision that denies the federal government the power to negotiate down the per unit price of drugs, like the Veterans Administration does and the military does. So we pay top dollar through Medicare Part D, whatever the drug industry wants to set for the price of drugs that are used in Medicare Part D, the federal government is obliged by that statute to pay it.
Jonathan, we're getting a lot of scratchy from your phone, so I'm going to ask you to get to the highest point wherever you might be. All right?
Okay.
And
all right, I'm there.
Let's see if it cleans up. Let's go to Don in Montana. Welcome to the show. Don, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to state I'm 60 years old, almost 61. I've never had a vaccination. I get a sniffle once every 10, 12 years. My son's the same way. And I know other children, from grandchildren and children, that have had vaccinations, and it seems like they have colds or just runny noses all the time.
Fevers, all that stuff.
Yeah, everything. And I thought, I know I have a good immune system, but would it harm the immune system? And how, if so, how do you get these laws reversed? And I'll listen off the air.
All right. I'm not sure. How do you get these laws reversed, Jonathan? I don't know if you can. The bureaucracy is too big. I think we lost Jonathan, by the way. He was up on the high hill, and he's gone. But we'll get him right back in just a moment. But, Don, let me tell you, you're probably one of the lucky ones who has a good immune system, and it's that immune system which allows you to fight off anything. And like you said, all you get is a few little sniffles, and that is it. I got vaccinated when I was a kid. I probably have that simian monkey virus in my system from the 50s. I don't get vaccinated now. I don't take the flu shot. I can't remember when I had the flu. I can't. So we're gonna go with your comments without Jonathan Emord. If we get him, great. He is somewhere way out. And he's on his cell phone. Normally, we don't do cell phone interviews with guests, but we had to do it with Jonathan because that's all they have. But it appears that they're having some issues getting him, so his phone may have died. But we told him to plug it in, so we'll see what's going on. Let's go to Jamie in Rialto, California. First-time caller. Welcome to the program, Jamie.
Hi, George. It's so good to talk to you. Hey, I had two questions. I just recently found out that some of the vaccines contain fetal tissue that are taken from babies that were aborted in the 50s and 60s, and they're taking the tissue out of the lungs and putting it in some of the vaccines. And my question was, why are they doing this? And my second question is, do you think that Senator Penn is now going to come back with another bill to force homeschool children, and then maybe after that to force vaccinate adults?
Ah, well, that's a good question. Jonathan, I understand we have you back.
Yes, I apologize. I just suddenly got cut off. I think, you know, one of the factors that she brings up is a very wise question, is the fact that because the drug industry is protected by law from being sued for vaccines, the safety and even the efficacy of vaccines can take a very low priority, such that compared to other drugs, where in other instances the drug company can be sued for drugs, in this instance they're exempt from any suit. And as a consequence, they are able to get by with all sorts of bizarre things. I mean, for years we talked about mercury in vaccines. As far as State Senator Pan is concerned, I'm sure if he could, he would advance the law to compel vaccination across the board. I think he really went quite far here by closing all of the exemptions. And, you know, this law applies to private and public elementary schools and child care centers and nurseries, not just public schools. It applies to private schools as well. So there's already there a great leap into areas that other states would never deem appropriate to extend their laws.
They went deep into that. You're absolutely right, Jonathan. Next up, we go to Westlake, Oregon. Mark's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mark, you're on with Jonathan E. Moore. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, George. Good evening, Jonathan.
Hi.
Well, I'll tell you, there is the elephant in the room, and that is actually what these vaccinations, so to speak, vaccinations, because they do not vaccinate against disease. They actually toxify the human body, and this is in peer-reviewed research by various neurologists, brain surgeons, who've actually seen the evidence of what these substances, such as mercury, the fetal tissue that was mentioned by a previous caller there, George, and a good number of other things which are all toxic to the brain and to the body, including live cancer viruses.
Okay.
Now, any law which would make this legal is an illegal law. It's against the Constitution, as I'm sure you're aware, Jonathan, and we have a right to health under the basic premise of our legal system, which is the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As I say, when you lose your health, you've lost it all, basically. Now, just one statistic that is, I think, the prime example for the harm that vaccinations have done, and again, this is in the peer-reviewed research. It's attributed to the so-called vaccinations, which are just injectable poisons. But if you go back 20 years, one in 3,000 children had autism, would develop the symptoms of autism shortly after birth. Now it's one in 60, approximately. So when you take this and you look at all of the research and all of the data and information that has been peer-reviewed and accumulated over the years, and you bring that into a court of law, just basically on an injury, malicious injury even, level, because they're fully aware, for instance, that they're putting the mercury in there, for one thing, and mercury is about the most toxic neurotoxin that exists.
Hold on, Mark. I'm going to hold you over for the break, but we'll come back and get you to finish up your questions and your thoughts on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest, Jonathan E. Moore, we're going to take final phone calls with Jonathan as we talk about what's happening in California with the forced vaccination law, your rights, and then your comments as well on Coast to Coast AM. And those of you who are just dying for the paranormal, Gary Gillespie joins me at the top of the hour as we talk about some true haunted stories and other paranormal encounters, so get ready for that. We're going to go back to Mark in Westlake, Oregon, to get more of what he was telling us about. Mark, I didn't want to lose you. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Jonathan. Actually, I would hate to think that we have arrived at such a level of lawlessness in this country among those who are ostensibly in the position, sworn their constitutional oath, whether it be federal or state or county level or city level. They have in one way or another, proclaim themselves to be in the vested interest of the people, or they have sworn an oath to it at the higher levels of government in this country. And they are breaking the law by omitting the action which is necessary to have prevented the actual onset of smart meters, which are three times over the EPA regulatory limits for microwattage and are legal by the regulations. They have ignored at the FDA all of the research that's been done on lab animals and farm animals being observed with tumors and becoming sick and having digestive problems, and it's the same with people. They have allowed, as your topic is tonight, the vaccinations to just go on with no FDA oversight. We're having lawlessness in our government, and that's really the problem. And the only way that we can solve that problem, which is a tremendous problem because that's really our only recourse, and then it becomes iffy because the only other recourse is to go into court, where many of the courts are bought and sold, and you cannot get a just verdict, and present the evidence, such as you're very good at doing, Jonathan, because I understand you, actually, I believe it was you that has won at least one case, perhaps it was against the FDA, I can't remember, at the Supreme Court level. And it takes a lawyer, and we have them in this country, such as yourself, Jonathan, to actually just take in the illegality of what's going on in this country and what's being perpetrated upon the people and the products that they use every day. And if we don't do that, I don't believe there's any way outside of a recall of Congress, all of those who have that 93% disapproval rating among the American people that's existed now for some years, to actually be recalled because they have abrogated the constitutional oath by omission and commission. And they all have insider trading privileges on Wall Street, and they legalized that for themselves several years ago when it came to light. So we know what's going on, and we have to, I always have a two-word phrase these days, do something, or they will continue to run over us like they're doing in California with these obnoxious laws by this one man, this one senator who has actually pushed it through. And
well,
here
brings up an interesting question, Mark. Let me ask you this, and you, Jonathan, and they're piling in here phone calls from you. How can one man be so powerful to get something like this passed into law? Jonathan?
Well, I think that when there is a crisis or a perceived crisis, that oftentimes those who wish to expand government power at the expense of individual liberty are on the ascendancy and gain tremendous support. And this is true throughout American history. We have been most at risk of losing our liberty in those instances where we've had a perceived crisis in which there is a general hysteria and people look for a quick fix, regardless of what it does to our rule of law or to our rights. And that's what happened here. The measles outbreak beginning at Disneyland and then repeated other measles cases across the country gave this senator an opportunity to do what he had wanted to do for a long, long time, which was enact legislation that would eliminate the exemptions that protect a very small minority of people, but ones who value their liberty to dissent. And do so in sort of a fascistic manner without really much science or evidence to support that taking this step would do anything to improve public health. But they gained power. They gained the ability to deny certain individuals, a very small number, their right to dissent. And we see this not only in instances of vaccination, we see this during wartime. You'll remember when the Japanese were interned simply because they were Japanese, based on a national hysteria, the Korematsu Supreme Court decision, standing in place to defend the creation of concentration camps with Japanese citizens in it. That's not, you know, the McCarthy era. It's another great example of how extreme measures can be taken, ruining people's reputations solely based on the charge that you are a communist, even on the most fragile evidence, even on false charges. It's this sort of thing that happens in a democracy, and it's why we were not to be a true democracy, but were to be a republic, where the rule of law, and particularly the Bill of Rights, would stand in the way of those who wish to capitalize on a crisis.
Do kids who have not been vaccinated, that were in the school systems, do they get harassed by the other students?
Well, they will in those states now where there's legislation to publicly list those who are not vaccinated. I mean, it's come to the point where not only are their rights being stripped away, but they are being made to be vilified. And as we talked about at the beginning of the program, this is the course taken oftentimes by pediatricians to browbeat parents into thinking that they're going to be outcasts. And they're going to be looked upon as disreputable and as cruel and inhumane unless they go through the full vaccination program. There's no sound science in this, you know.
No.
Why should every child have to have every vaccine? Why do they have to go through the full vaccination program? Is there no difference based on weight, relative immune system health and function, location in the population? Is there no science to this? Is it just a dogmatic, we're going to inject everybody approach? If a serious question about a potential risk is raised, why is it blithely ignored and they vaccinate anyway? Why is it so hard to get doctors to say that someone has a reasonable medical basis for dissenting? It's because this has become not science, but a dogma and an orthodoxy that is state-sponsored. It is an abuse. It's a deprivation of liberty. It's a form of tyranny.
Well, actor and comedian James Carey went crazy over the passage of this. And, you know, you need more people like that to talk about this. Let's go to our international line, Rex in Kingston, Jamaica. Hey, Rex, go ahead. Thank you for holding.
This is kind of on topic. As it turns out, I've studied this for quite a while, and it has to do with chemtrails and the injections that are taking place due to the chemtrails. About 6 years ago, I saw the chemtrail go over, and I felt a needle-like object, very tiny one, go into my arm. And I developed MRSA and Morgellons disease from that injection. And so I started studying it, and I found out that there was a nanobiobot that had been produced and injected into me through the use of the chemtrails.
It just dropped down on you, you mean?
Yeah, I noticed the chemtrail went over, and then about 20 minutes later, I felt a sharp, stinging, tiny stinging pain in my forearm. And so at that point, I realized that I had been injected against my will, and I couldn't even see the injection mark. It was so tiny, but I could feel it. And what's being done is we're not being controlled by human beings. We're being controlled by reptoids that the Bible calls devils. And they are actually talking our military into using the chemtrails to reflect the sunlight, but they're providing the chemtrail product to the military. And they're putting a nanobiobot, which is a monoatomic particle of quartz or silica.
Well, I got to tell you, Rex, that's the first I've heard of that. Now, we've talked about chemtrails on this program, and they're spraying something. But that's the first time I heard they had little nanobots in there. Jonathan, you ever come across stuff like that?
Well, frankly, George, no. it's an amazing story. That's all I can say.
It sure is. Next up, we go to Nick in Garden City, New York. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Hey, George. Hey, Jonathan. How's it going tonight?
Good.
So I know we're talking about the state of California and what they're doing, but Jonathan, I really want to ask your opinion and hear your thoughts on this. What do you think about mandatory vaccination in the armed forces? Do you feel that that should be allowed or not, or what do you think?
Well, when it comes to the armed forces, we do have a constriction of liberty, quite obviously. Once you are subjecting yourself to serve the nation, you are giving up certain of your rights. You're giving up your right to travel. You're giving up your right, you'll travel where the government sends you. You're giving up your right to dissent from command and to have an independent opinion that, to the extent that it would directly challenge the dictates of the commander-in-chief. So there are constraints on your liberty. But when it comes to mandatory vaccination in the military, I think we've taken things, again, too far here, because I think that while you may be able in a specific instance to say, yes, there's a requirement for you to be vaccinated because you're going into an area of contagion or whatever, the general notion that people should be vaccinated regardless of where they're going to be sent, I think is an abuse. And I think that the same is true. You know, we've had problems with just the provision of medical care in general to our military forces through the VA and through the military. We haven't done a good enough job of protecting our troops and giving them the best possible care. That all goes into making rational decisions about when people need to be vaccinated and not compelling them to receive all their vaccinations when that may not be necessary. So I think it's really a question of intelligent command, and I would wish for it in the military. I feel sorry for those who have to be accepting vaccinations because just it's a dictate without any common sense behind it.
When I was in the Navy, they give us one of those forced cholera injections, and I got to tell you, Jonathan, my arm swelled up the size of a small cantaloupe. And, I mean, throbbing, hot, hurt, unbelievable. But that's the kind of reaction you get with stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's sort of a, it really is, it's an abusive thing. And while I would admit that in certain instances, there's a rational choice. You know, for example, if you're going into an area that's cholera infested, maybe there's a good reason to give everybody a cholera vaccine. But for everybody else, why? Or, you know, for other people in the military, why should they have a general vaccination when they're going to be stateside? You know, so I think that there needs to be more intelligent planning here. The same is true all the way through. The medical care given our forces should be the best we can possibly make it. And we should respect these people who are willing to sacrifice their lives for our country by giving them the best we possibly can. These people deserving of our greatest respect and service.
Let's go to Eve now in Hawaii. Eve, thank you for calling. You're on the air with us.
So, hi, Jonathan and George. I listen to Coast to Coast every night. And
Thank you.
When you came on tonight, I just had to get on. You know, I am going to be 73 years old, and I've never taken a medication in my life. And I want to know, do people die of measles? I mean,
die of measles? Some people have died from measles, Jonathan.
They have?
I don't know what the number is, but some people have died from measles, and they've also died from the, and they, but they more have died from the injection, have they not?
Well, here's the thing. I had measles. There's more than one kind of measles. I had measles. I think I had measles four times. When I was a senior in high school, my friend said to me, "You have red spots all over you." So I go to the nurse, and the nurse says, "You have measles. You have to go home." I had measles, mumps, chicken pox. We had all these. It didn't kill us, and it didn't really hurt us. I had four brothers and sisters, and so one got it, and the next one got it, and the next one got it. Everybody had that. And now they're getting these injections with all these chemicals in them. Why don't they just let people get the measles? I mean, they're immune now. And look at me. I have an immune system. It's amazing. I'm healthier than most of the 40-year-olds I know.
Good for you.
But I was blessed. But and another thing, I was a medical staff assistant at a hospital, and I took minutes in these doctor's meetings where they sat around and discussed the medications they were going to give their patients. It's just kind of a crapshoot. They discuss this new medication. They go, well, let's try it. Then they sit around for another half an hour discussing all the side effects and how they're going to treat the side effects. So, you know, when I go to the doctor, I almost never go to the doctor because I don't have anything wrong with me. But they come in with their little clipboard, and he tells me, well, you didn't put any of your medications down here. And then you don't know what to say to them. But I don't know why people have to get these injections because they're afraid to get the measles. Just get the measles.
And in my day, Jonathan, and thanks, Eve, I think they wanted you to get the measles just so you could build up your immune system. Do you remember what that was like when you were a kid?
Yeah, I do. I had the measles. I had the mumps. I had the chicken pox. I can't remember, but I believe I went through the whole vaccination program, and I got them anyway. I never had any major problems. They put me, I forget what, I think it was the chicken pox, they put me in a dark room. But, you know, these were inconveniences, but they were not life-threatening, certainly. And when you consider that, as I said, since 2005, there have been 5 deaths linked to the measles vaccine, it's not inconsiderable. And when you compare that to the instance of death associated with measles, well, you know, it's really very, very low. So we have a problem. And with all problems that are insoluble, we have to rely upon the exercise of individual choice. If you're predisposed to wanting to be vaccinated and carrying the risk that may cause you to suffer some physical illness associated with the vaccine, go right ahead. If, on the other hand, you don't want to be vaccinated, your right to not be vaccinated should be respected.
Well, let us keep fighting the good fight, Jonathan, to be sure. Jonathan Emord's website, emord.com. Go there, take a look. Back in a moment with some paranormal encounters.